Catches on fast, though.
Badrang was up and about, looking much the worse for wear, but still bad-tempered and active.
Grosstooth, tell the Horde to hold back their weapons a bit. I want to parley with that lot on the shore.
Archers and slingers stopped. Badrang's jaws were aching from Feldo's blows, so he got a rat called Nipwort, who possessed a high, squeaky voice, to call out his message. Nipwort funneled both paws around his mouth and shouted,
"Parley! Ceasefire! We want a parley!"
"Then parley away, Pipsqueak! What do you want?"
Roanoke's readily identifiable roar came back at him.
"My master, Lord Badrang, can keep you pinned down there and slay you at his leisure. If you surrender, you will not be killed."
This time it was Balor who answered.
"Tell me, my good chap, what happens to us after we surrender?"
"That will be for Lord Badrang to decide."
Balor's head popped up over the cart.
"Blinkin' nerve of the rascal. Listen, Rusty Hinge. You tell old Bad Trousers that the Commander-in-Chief of the Fur and Freedom Fighters said that he can go and boil his scurvy head, what?"
The reply was accompanied by a healthy hail of sling stones, one of which knocked Nipwort senseless. Badrang crouched beneath the parapet, massaging the numbness from his paws.
"Get a fire going. Use flaming arrows on that cart. We'll burn them out into the open."
Chapter 38.
Guided by Baldred, Martin and his party made it in good time to the broad stream inlet. They were greeted by Starwart's cheery cry as they came in sight of the water.
"Ahoy, mates! Come on aboard!"
The big otter boat Water Lily was packed with tough-looking otters, and in tow she had a flat-bottomed barge, also filled to the gunwales with more otters. They made room for Martin and his contingent. Starwart grinned and held up a thonged sling.
"Mainly uses these for sport and fishing, but we all got one. Miss Rose, good to see your pretty face again. Still keeping this warrior of yours in check, I hope. Palamangram! Well, shake me ruddy, you're looking plump and fitter than ever."
A flotilla of shrew canoes came racing round the bend and hit the bank with a loud, damp thud. Starwart winked at Baldred.
"Oh, look out! Here comes trouble on the tide."
Baldred blinked at the teeming, arguing masses of shrews, yelling and waving the swords angrily.
"What are they doing here?"
Starwart flexed his powerful paws.
"I thought we might need extra help, so I told them they weren't allowed to follow us and I forbid them to take part in any fight. You know the shrews, mate. Never do as they're told."
The otter waved at his deck crew.
"Cast off forward. Cast off aft. Cast off midships. Away we go. You shrews, stop here. You ain't common, see?"
Rose and Palom chuckled at Starwart's ruse as a veritable armada of craft pulled out into the stream with Water Lily in the vanguard. Martin stood in the bows of the otter boat, as if willing it to travel faster. Worry etched itself across his brow. Baldred perched on the forward rail.
"Rest, Martin. Nothing you can do will make the river flow swifter."
Grimjaw, the young mouse, pawed his sword hilt as he paced back and forth, heedless of the glorious sunset on the water.
"I'll never forgive myself if we're too late. Travelling to Noonvale was a mistake. I should have stayed on the coast and sought Brome out. Feldo too. Things might have been different."
Baldred folded the wings, shifting from claw to claw.
"Aye, you could have all been slain. Then what help would you be? This way you are returning to Marshank with an army at your back. Many more are coming to aid your cause. I have made sure of that."
Martin watched the stream slip by, gurgling and eddying.
"Forgive me, friend. I must seem very ungrateful after all you have done to help."
"It is natural to worry when friends are in danger, Martin. Don't think about what you could have done. Concentrate on what you plan to do. It is more useful."
Baldred spread her wings, preparing for flight.
"I must leave you for a while now. There are more things that I have to do. I'll see you at Marshank, Warrior Mouse. Good seasons and fair winds go with us both."
Martin watched his feathered friend winging off downstream into the evening treetops, silhouetted against a sky of lilac and gold.
"Move your stern a touch, matey, and let me get at the drum."
Starwart's wife, Marigold, opened the locker and rolled out a big flat drum. She placed it on a coil of rope and began whacking it slowly with her rudder-like tail. The deep boom cut through the twilight stillness as Rose came to join Martin in the bows. They both looked on, perplexed, until Marigold explained.
Just drumming up a little more help. My starwort always says that willing pours are welcome ones.
A rolling drum answered Marigold's summons. Rose pointed upstream.
Look!
Waiting to join them was a sprawling flat raft with a rickety shed built at its centre. Lines of otters and burly hedgehogs stood by the long poles, waiting to join the fleet. Starwort sprang to the bowsprit, waving at the newcomers.
Yo-ho, go by me, old mucker! Come to join in the fun!
The biggest of the hedgehogs was a female. Coloured tassels hung from her head spikes, and she brandished a formidable war club studded with chunks of crystal.
Yo-ho, Starwort! You're getting fat and sleek these days. What's Marigold been feeding ye on?
Starwort grinned mischievously as he ducked a swipe from his wife.
Hard words and hot root when she's not bullying the babies.
Gulba's husband, Trung, was small and fat. He emerged from the shack eating a water shrimp pasty and twirling a thong with two stones clacking on its split end.
Who are we fighting? And when do we get at them, Marigold?
Martin came alert as he listened to the information.
The vermin in the big place by Eastern Sea. With a following breeze and no stream blockages, we should get there by noon on the morrow. Are you game?
The raft pushed off as they passed, bumping several shrew-long boats and following the water lily's wake swirl. Gulba leaned on her war club and scowled.
We're with you. 'Tis only a matter of time before that scummy stoat takes over the whole coast and starts foraging inland for slaves. I say we put a stop to him smart-like.
Throughout the night, Martin's piecemeal slumbers were broken as the drums sounded and more woodland tribes joined the swelling ranks. Rose slept through it all. Waking at dawnlight, she was amazed and delighted to see the stream packed with boats and craft of all shapes, each one low in the water, with creatures ready to fight at their side. Along the banks she could see others, squirrels and mice, keeping pace with the vessels as a swift lope. Starwort dashed past her and leaped up on the rail. Steadying himself on a rope, he put a paw to his brow, scanning the mist-wreathed waters ahead.
Steady on, backwater, buckos! The outlet's in sight!
Martin left off opening a food pack.
What's the outlet?
Suddenly, the water lily picked up speed as if she were being sucked along on the current, and a rushing noise became audible. Starwort winked at Martin and Rose.
Best all tight. The outlet's where we join the main broad stream again. Nothing to worry about. It's only rapids.
The whole craft gave a lurch, and it began to buck and leap. Timbers groaned crazily as Marigold shouted forward.
Starwort, get your eye aft and do something useful. I can't manage this tiller single poured.
There was no time for more talk. Rose hung grimly onto Martin. Winding a ringing rope about his paws, the young mouse took a deep breath as the otter boat tilted into the rapids. A huge rainbow appeared through the mist of boiling spray as water engulfed every beast aboard, and the craft stood almost on its end as it flew helter-skelter down the sickening drop. Ragged rocks rushed by. Grum opened his mouth to yell, but it was filled with water. He clung to Palom, ignoring his friend's spikes. The world seemed to turn upside down for several perilous moments, the drum rat-tatting as rapid water beat at it. Starwort and Marigold laughed with wild exuberance as they fought the swivelling tiller. Together they roared above the melee.
Down we go!
With a loud flat splash, the water lily landed in the broad stream. Starwort was immediately up on the stern, bawling orders.
Ship out, mates! Pull her clear, make fast that raft and get her in midstream!
The otter crew worked furiously as other craft dropped in behind them. Two shrew longboats collided in mid-air and overturned. Gulba and her husband Trung, the two hedgehogs who steered the ramshackle craft, together with their otter friends, managed to make a perfect flat landing in an immense cascade of water. The hut at the centre of the big raft half disintegrated under the impact, but Gulba paid it no heed. She was yelling sternly at the shrews.
Oi, shrewheads! Don't you know the meaning of the order to backwater? You're mad as scotch frogs, you lot!
As if to prove her point, two shrew boats flew overhead, packed with shouting and arguing creatures. They sailed right over the craft. Gulba ducked as they flew by her mid-air. Splash! Crash! Both boats hit the water, miraculously staying upright. A shrew stood up, waving his sword at the hedgehog.
Tend to your own raft, spike dog! We know what we're doing!
As boats were righted and soaking creatures hauled from the water, the fleet gradually got itself back onto an even keel. Rose shook Starwort and his wife by the paws gratefully.
Oh, you were so skillful, both of you. The way you took command and knew just what to do, steering this great boat right the way down those dangerous rapids. Only two creatures such as yourselves would know how to navigate that terrible drop in safety.
Marigold bobbed a comical curtsy.
Well, thank ye now, pretty one. That was the first time we've ever been down those rapids.
Bump. Grum fainted. Swift started and wheeled over the water in brilliant morning sunlight as it burned the mists away. Martin finished breakfasting and went to stand up in the bows next to Starwort. The sturdy otter leaned confidentially close.
Listen, matey, while I tell you three words you want to hear. Next stop, Marshank.
A tremor ran through the warrior's body. He clasped the sword handle tight, his eyes shining like flints in firelight.
I'm coming, Badrang!
Chapter 39.
The cart was a charred, smoking thing, but it still stood. All night the fighting had been furious with no let-up. Fair and Freedom fighters had battled against flaming shafts with their bare paws and sand. Four lay dead and three wounded. Smoke-grimed and bleary-eyed, they had plucked burning arrows from the wood, strung them on the bows, and returned them to stick blazing in the gates of Marshank. The javelin supply was depleted, one shaft being retained for each creature in the event that paw-to-paw combat would be their final stand. There were still plenty of rocks to sling, Keela and Tulgrew taking charge of the slingers, whilst Balor managed a frugal breakfast. The hare sat wearily against one of the sandbanks that had been shorn up either side of the cart. Roanoke slumped beside him. Both were singed and smoke-grimed. Roanoke drank half a water, passing the rest on to Brome, who distributed it among the wounded. The badger wiped a sandy paw across her scorched muzzle.
Well, Balor de Quinceworld, what's to report?
The irrepressible hare wiped dust from his half-scone ration and looked up at the sky.
Report? Nothing much, really. Except that it looks like being another nice sunny day, what?
A flaming arrow extinguished itself in the sand close by Roanoke. She tossed it onto a pile of other shafts waiting to be shot.
A nice day indeed. Do you think we'll be around to see the sunset?
Without waiting for an answer, she continued.
I wonder if that owl, Boldred, wasn't it? I wonder if she ever managed to get through to this Martin the Warrior creature.
Balor picked dried blood from a wound on his narrow chest.
Doesn't look like it, does it? No, old Rowan, my badger oak, I think the stage is all ours, and it'll be our duty to give the best performance we can before the curtain falls for the last time.